Hey, Caitlin.
Hey, Rebecca.
Nice to see you.
Good to see you. How have you been?
I'm here. Is it spring yet in DC? Because it's still in the upper 40s here in New England.
Oh, my friend, it is definitely spring here in DC. The trees and all the flowers are blooming. The grass is green and fragrant, and the imminent threat of the trillions of cicadas are pressing closer and closer to us. I had my first cicada sighting yesterday. Somebody saw three of them today that I was with. So, like, it is getting closer, and I'm terrified.
I am expecting photos, but more so I'm trying to figure out how we record our late May episode with that noise in the background. I might have to finally make you make a sound box.
I'll do a makeshift little sound box somewhere, but never fear, dear listeners, we'll catch, just a few minutes of cicada sound for all of those who aren't on the East Coast of the United States, who don't get to experience this unprecedented swarm that is popping up here. Some say this weekend, some say really soon.
I mean, I'm misled. It's in the lower 50s here, and the trees have bloomed, and some flowers have bloomed, but more flowers that are supposed to be here. We're not sure if the bulbs froze or not this season. So we had like 4 days of amazing weather, and then we had second winter, and now we're just in whatever this is. It's a little chilly. It's what it is.
Yeah.
I am fully vaccinated. You are on your vaccine route. With a full vaccination, my wife and I are having our first like full date day since this began. So when this episode goes live, I will be nowhere near any of the equipment to fix it. So hopefully everything works correctly.
Well, I am not doing too much. You know, I'm really trying to be outside, starting to see people again now that we're all getting our vaccinations. I've discovered, I may have talked about this on the podcast before, but everyone knows that I'm a reality TV junkie, and I've really been finding solace in on YouTube, Whitney Port from The Hills and The City. I can feel that I'm losing people as I'm saying this, but I'm gonna press on. So Whitney Port and her husband have a YouTube channel. It's really lovely, and they've been rewatching all of The Hills with their running commentary. They're midway through the third season, which is, everyone should know, is the juiciest season when all the sex tape rumors are spreading, and right at like the crux of all of these people becoming like too famous for their own good. And so Whitney was on the show and giving her perspective, and then her husband actually is a reality TV show producer, and like they met while he was producing a show with her. So he's giving some like fun behind the scenes of making the show and sort of like what goes into it. And it's just enough of a mix of like behind the scenes content with genuinely just rewatching The Hills, which I loved, coupled with like rewatching a show that you loved as an 18-year-old and watching it now as a 30-year-old, and just recognizing this weird moment that we all participated in. And that's been like pretty, you know, when I have a little break from work and I need to like fill 10 minutes, I watch one of their videos. So that's what I've been doing.
I appreciate you very much. If it wasn't for you, I would know nothing about any reality TV that isn't a competition. So thank you.
You're welcome.
When we started talking just a few moments ago, I had mentioned, you know, It's still a little chilly here, but I would like to point out the irony of starting the spring with an author named Winter.
Yep.
So I have been, I'm not even going to say about like my experience with this. Yeah. So Lee Winter, for those who don't know, is an Australian author. If you don't know her work, I really hope this episode does anything to push you towards it. I am a huge fan, and I know I'm going to like fan gender out throughout this episode. But Caitlin, as somebody who I feel is in these novels consistently, how did you come to Lee Winter's work, and what is your initial energy as we get ready to talk about Hotel Queens?
Yeah, so basically ever since I started reading Lesfic, you and many other people have been saying, you gotta read Lee Winter, especially the more that I realized that I acclimated towards Ice Queens, towards like powerful business women, you know, stories that involve people in the throes of like mergers and hostile takeovers and all of this stuff. So what sold me to finally take the plunge and read one of her books, which had been described to me as like a glacial, slow burn businesswoman, ice queen universe, was you told me that these books feel inspired by The Devil Wears Prada, and specifically like the character of Miranda Priestly and the image of the like powerful entrepreneur, like businesswoman boss that Miranda Priestly holds, which, you know, listen, everything in that sentence I love. Everything in that sentence I love. So that's,
I mean, it's like many of the novels arguably are Mirandy fanfic. So Miranda and Andrea Sachs,
yeah,
inspiration. And I, contrary to how I may present in life, like that movie's in my top five. I am a diehard fan. I love it. And yeah, so we'll touch on fanfic. See, it's already starting. Just the like, But I will say, you know, I joke frequently on here that's like, you should see the text message. I got it 11:30 p.m. or 1 a.m. or whatever. But I honestly think the Lee Winter texts are some of my favorite, because it's just this level of confidence and intellectual regurgitation that like you just don't have with other books. Other books, you know, are my feels, my this or that. And you're just like, damn right, that's how that was supposed to happen. And that is exactly. And I don't feel the need to correct how they handled business, because she actually did it plus a little bit more beyond what I thought she was going to do.
I love it, because there are some instances. So I don't know if people are familiar, if you're familiar with BoJack Horseman, there's a character named Vincent on BoJack Horseman who is three children stacked on top of each other, and he's dressed up as a businessman, and she's trying to be an adult, and he's like, business, I do business. And there are some books where I'm like, you don't know what you're talking about, and I don't know what you're talking, like, there are just some instances where I'm like, I can see the shell that you're trying to build, but like, it's not there for me, and this is not one of those things. This is not three children stacked in a trench coat kind of writing, and oh, I love it. I love everything about it.
Super powerful. For breaking character, it's Hollywood. For the brutal truth, it's magazines and publication empires. Here within Hotel Queens, it's acquisition of properties and maintaining customer rental spaces. It's just so good. That you also have When DC Met Iowa, which I don't think as many people know. Please talk to me about that book if you've read it. I need to talk to somebody. yes. Yes.
So, because I don't think we've actually said the title of the book that we are doing yet. We love, so Rebecca told me to read Lee Winter. I finally did. And then I have hastily read almost every single thing that she has created. We are focusing on my first introduction to her writing, which is Hotel Queens. And oh my God, there's so much to talk about here. So I'm going to go ahead and give a spoiler warning just in case we delve into aspects of the plot of this book. But this is truly one of those ones where, like, just go read it, because we're not going to even be able to capture all of the nuance and the amazing things that are in these pages.
So the basic premise of this book is an ice queen meets just a fiery business person. So, you know, fire and ice, the joke and the final outcome is already there. But we'll get to that when we get to a different scene. Basically, we get this brilliant ice queen in Amelia Duxton, who is a hotel vice president who's vying to work up the chain in a family conglomerate of hotel empires, whose brother is a drunken gambling idiot, and whose father definitely takes advantage of her intelligence and her hard work, but also undervalues her for being a woman as well as other things within her life. On the other side, we have Kay Fisher, who's this very charming and charismatic woman who works within advertising within other businesses and also acquires things for the company she works for. She has a much more in-depth backstory, including formerly being a lawyer, as well as quite a bit of social justice work that's done behind the scenes. Is that fair to say?
Definitely.
But basically what happens is we get these two who meet head on when they end up in Vegas. Amelia's on her way to Vegas to do some undercover work to figure out what's going wrong at this particular hotel. And Kay is there to make a transaction as well as expose the crap that's going on within this hotel. So that's the very pared down explanation of how we start.
Yeah, I will just to add to that, they are both headed to Vegas because they are sent there. So Amelia is sent there to sort of clean it up. And at the same time, she's trying to close the deal on this beautiful grand new hotel, Mayfair Palace. And she is kind of told and also believes that if she gets both of these things in order, she will become the new CEO, especially since her brother has once again fucked up and it seems like the path for her is clear. Kay is sent to Vegas because she has intel that this mysterious hotel owner, builder, who currently is building the Mayfair Palace, will be there. And her boss says, you know, like, I want this project. I want to take it from the Duxtons. You know, like, this could create a whole new wave in hotels. So the two of them are there. They want the same thing. They're there to try to get the same prize. And they end up meeting at the hotel bar. And they don't know who the other is. They're sort of attracted to each other. They're attracted to many qualities about each other. And they kind of suss out that both of them are in the hotel business. But, you know, both of them know the caricature of each other. Like, if they had been introduced at face value, they would be like, no, you're my enemy. We will not speak. We will not talk. And it's actually Kay who gives Amelia the idea to go undercover, to be in the different departments at this hotel and experience what it is really like to be a worker in the Duxton Corporation, because she has heard, and there's a Twitter account that puts out information anonymously, that working for the Duxton Hotel Group is just terrible. They mistreat their workers. They don't pay them enough. There's huge injustices within the hotel system. So Amelia, not believing that of her own family and her own business that she's put her life into, decides to go undercover. And we get some really funny things there. And there, again, there's so much plot to the business machinations of this book that I don't think we're going to get into, because I want to talk about these two women. Let's like focus in on them for a bit.
All right, Kaylin, where do you want to focus on these women? I cannot wait to hear this.
Well, so I love an ice queen, and
I mean, you need a scarf and a jacket when Amelia walks into our room.
It's like glacial levels of ice. Like, I was just about to make a slightly inappropriate Titanic joke. It's like, from the first page that we meet her, she is just the meme, the Miranda Priestly meme of like, by all means, take your time. I can't wait. Like, oh.
Well, when she's trying to check in at the hotel because they have such a high turnover rate, and definitely that is something I want to talk about. You know, it's the most recent person has quit, or they're double, like staff is double, triple, quadruple dipping and making up for like lacking staff. So her annoyance at the system would almost be, you know, well, hey, I'm not receiving what I should be receiving. But Winter does such a phenomenal job of both introducing what she's used to, as well as how naive she is, to immediately taking in the people around her and the energy around her. I would argue the big difference between Amelia and Kay with how they handle business is Kay is very much a person who is about interaction with people and getting the final product through connection in that way. And Amelia is very much the person who's like, here's the numbers, here's why the numbers work, and here's how we make the numbers work better if they don't. It's spoken about many times within the novel that Amelia never forgets a number, and she's doing decimals to like the 100th or the 1,000th degree sometimes. So, which as a person who used to work in commission work and resale, like I have a lot of respect for doing that. It is a talent that you only get to maintain if you practice it daily.
It's super impressive. When Kay first interacts with Amelia, they're at this bar and Amelia has ordered a drink and has just scared the bartender.
A Negroni, which between the two of us, you can speak to the flavor palette of a little bit more.
Yeah, I mean, you know, a Negroni should be one thing, and
he adds 10 ounces of Campari. Like, my whole, like, I just, the bitterness in my mouth is just like, I can't.
Oh god, I could feel my insides shriveling up in that scene, both an embarrassment for the bartender who like just can't make this drink, and he's faced with the stare of Amelia, who wherever she goes, she's kind of in the position of like expecting excellence. And if she's not getting met with it, she lets you know that she expects excellence and how you are not rising to it. And then in slides Kay, who is just oozing charm and just like wit. And she's a little bit of an asshole. Like, she's kind of making fun of Amelia, but she's also recognizing her, just like the power, the energy that she's giving off. And she, Kay feels bad for the bartender. You know?
So I want to unpack the brilliance of the writing in this scene. We have just these three characters. Amelia, who is staunch and I'm sure like ramrod tight in her chair, sitting upright with this drink in front of her, who's not even taking what she's being told into account. She's basically like, go away, fly. And this rampant bartender, to where she takes a swig of this drink, which is atrocious. He has misread 1 ounce for 10 ounces. And she reads the bartender for filth. Yeah. Because they do have an laminated sheet of every single recipe. She also, these are like the hints and nods that Winter is so amazing at doing in her books, where people are consistent throughout it. But when you go back and do a reread, you see how consistent they were throughout it. So knowing the hotel chain, she's like, it should be 1 ounce. Campari is very expensive. She never directly tells this bartender that like who she is, but he, between her aesthetic and her multi-thousand dollar watch and other things, is smart enough to pick that up. He becomes super nervous She doesn't even look at the menu when she's kind of chastising him. She keeps eye contact with him, basically saying what the menu says by heart, because again, she never forgets a number. And then there's this delightfully ice queeny pick through his heart in the very last moment where she says, "And stir it, don't shake it." That's also in the directions. I worked in food service for a very long time, like a decade. And ouch, like that poor bartender, but also how fucking genius to like describe Amelia's personality and her having to have the final note and the final just such strong writing. It is such great character development with so little. It like strong writers just I'm always in awe, and this is like a prime example of a scene that in any other book would be like an awkward bar scene or a hockey bar scene. And here all three characters get their own unique energy and persona, and they all get to drive home the point that's most important to them. It was it's so well done. It's so good.
It made me miss going to bar. It made me miss going to my bars, you know, like the bar that I and my coworkers would go to multiple times a week. And
the flirting at the bar and the call outs of Kay basically saying, "I read people, that's what I do. I bring people at ease to get what I want." And she kind of goes through like picking up on Amelia's stuff, but not quite figuring out who Amelia is. And Amelia at the end turns it on her and it's like, "Well, you told me at the beginning that you basically read people or make people like you in order to get information you need, which leads me to, you know, believe that's what you're doing to me. So you're saying you don't know anything about me, but I know nothing about you. Everything you've done has been performative to get to know more about me." And the way these two flirt is just ridiculous, because it is flirting. It starts with such reserved flirting on Amelia's part. And then there's a, I hope people go back and read. I don't want to spend too much time on this, but that accidental quote unquote ear bite.
Yeah. Oh my God. Oh my God. I read a lot of reviews on various just like sites, as we were preparing for this episode, and a lot of the reviews mentioned the flirting in this book. Like, so you have the build up to Vegas, and then you have these two women in Vegas, which is roughly about a week. And then there's like, you know, sometime after that, an epilogue and all that. But the week in Vegas, it feels so long because so much happens during it. But it's such a perfect example of what just like good flirtation can do for the reader and for building tension and building chemistry for these characters. So we don't get the traditional arc of a lesfic or a romance relationship where, you know, within 50 pages, they have the first kiss. In chapter 13, they have sex for the first time. They're married.
Wait, a winter book where somebody had sex before chapter 20?
Oh, my God. This is like they get drunk and bite one person's ear flirtatiously in chapter 9, and they make out for the first time in chapter 17. And
you are arbitrarily making up these chapters right now.
I am making these up. I don't have any notes about this, but you never feel gypped. You never feel like there's so much like steam. It feels like a pot with a lid on it that's just like about to boil over, and it's so carefully held in place by this just like masterful writing. It's
and
Winter so
did
good.
It to us, and I'm not sure if you realized it, but she told us exactly what she was going to do to us when she explains how Vegas works. She talks about unique scents being in each like venue, so you associate memory with that venue. And we completely know when one of the characters is entering because they're described by their smell. So she set that up. She delivered. She sets up in Vegas how they pump more clean, like straight oxygen, which keeps you more awake and does your endorphins, and you take more risks. So we often see Amelia taking risks she says she wouldn't take when it comes to her interaction with Kay. Again, she's in this one building with heightened oxygen. You can talk about gambling. She's gambling with her own shit there. The third thing, the crux, is we hear all the time about like her expensive timepiece, but how in Vegas mm-hmm. everything is lit in a way with no clocks to make you unsure of how much time has passed. So yeah. these two, instead of having the like, love you for indefinitely forever, have this like, oh, this flirting's just been going on for a significant amount of time and time doesn't really pass. The gambling description of Vegas is paired against these two interacting and it's absolutely genius.
It's so good. It made me want to go to Vegas, and I've never wanted to go to Vegas.
Have you been to Vegas? Like,
I've never been, and the only time
I absolutely hate it, and also probably be that person on the bar by the end of the night.
Yeah, I mean, I may have drunkenly promised your wife that we could go for a birthday.
She wants like, to go with you and a few other people for a specific ladies' college reunion birthday celebration. Yes.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Oh, God.
Vegas has something for everyone. So, that's all I'll say. Yeah. It has something for everybody. It never pretends, as they say in here, it never pretends to be something it isn't.
Exactly. Exactly. So we've kind of talked around the idea of Amelia going undercover. Let's talk. I'm going to pour another drink really quick. And then when I get back, let's talk about sort of class and the undercover boss stuff that's going on here in this book.
Oh, bring it.
Yeah. Okay. BRB.
So class versus job. Mm-hmm. Amelia comes from a very high class presentation. She takes this dare from Kay to go undercover to work within her hotel, which has a ridiculously high turnover rate, which I will get to in a minute, and to see what is leading to the mass exodus that's happening. This is played out a little bit more in the bar scene when they convince the bartender to do an experiment where there is a glass and some liquid that Kay is pouring, and she's like, you tell me when to stop based on how many people quit per week, like how many ounce pour or whatever. I don't quite remember. Yeah. And basically his statement at the end was he stopped before it overflowed. The glass wasn't big enough. This is a huge problem within the hotel. The hotel has put into place this, I'm not going to be able to hold back during this, this disgusting, horrible, atrocious practice that is probably illegal, but takes advantage of working class people who cannot rely on finding a healthier job and a legal job position because they live paycheck to paycheck, probably due to the life in which they have been navigating for a long time, service industry people and hard class working people. What the hotel is currently doing within their system is they are paying you a baseline, and then you are on a point system where you get points deducted and do all this other stuff, which then will deduct from your paycheck and prevent you from getting promotions or earning more pay. So everything's imploding inside because, as the bartender says, when we learn about it from him, he is only responsible for himself, not children, not family. So a little bit of a pay cut doesn't send him into the red as fast as maybe some other people. Mm-hmm. We have this amazing thing from Kay, which we eventually learn more about later, where we get to know the people as if they are informants. And then through Amelia, we get to know who they are as people. I want to talk business with you because like where you saw yourself like super empowered in these like negotiations and big, huge things. I have a moment when I read this book where I'm like, we have watched so many movies, read so many books, listened to so many songs, ballads, biblical stories, like indefinitely through human history of if you treat the people who work at your baseline as the representation for you like shit, it can destroy your company and you're a bad person. Mm-hmm. Yet somehow we keep retelling these stories because companies don't care. And if they can like save pennies or do whatever. One, rehiring people and turnover is super fucking expensive. And two, it's very hard to read this book because I was like, depending on where I was in my life, I probably wouldn't have been one of those people in a really toxic situation who stayed. I had an employer one time try to dock my paycheck due to something that happened between the kitchen and a table and food that was sent back. It was a very mom and pop style restaurant. And I was like, you legally can't do that in the state I lived in at that time. And I came in with receipts and I'm like, I expect it on my paycheck. If it's not there, I will seek additional help because I was in a place to risk that. when I read this book and watch Amelia continue to gather intel undercover, I'm like, you need to blow your freaking undercover and you need to start advocating for these people sooner. I get why she doesn't do it. It makes sense. But like blood boiling throughout this book.
Yeah. This book does something really subtle where there's not just the romance. There's not just the sort of fantastical through Kay and Amelia and their hotel acquisitions and like sort of the stuff that goes on with that. We're getting this really high level, like, you know, action movie level thing. And it's all splayed upon Vegas, which is glitzy and splashy, and there's money being thrown and around.
Super tacky.
And like, yeah, but there's the, at the core of this book, there is the story of Amelia going in, believing the best, not just of her family, but the system that she has spent her life working within and building and enforcing. Mm-hmm. And she slowly is getting shown that the very system that she exists within and has power in is destroying the people that run, like, that it needs to run. And I think that's something that a lot of that, like, that was a big realization, certainly for me, with parts of the pandemic. Like, the pandemic truly taught me, like, don't make your work your life, because you are just a figure in an institution whose goal is to survive and not to make life good for you. And you can really feel a lot of the tension of Amelia being undercover is she's shown over and over again how hard these jobs are, how the system that they're existing within, this pay system, just is so inhumane, and how there's a number of allegations about just inhumane treatment against her own family's business. And she's not running this hotel. She's just sent there to sort of like fix it up and make it better. She had been shunted off to London, where she runs her hotels, we have to say, with like good practices.
Amazingly well, with a really great like retention rate.
Yeah. And she comes in, and as she's slowly learning that the system that was put in place, she learns that her brother put this system in place. She learns that her family agreed to it because they exist in like this ultra capitalist society, and they're trying to make more money, even if people, you know, they don't care if turnover rate is terrible. They don't care that people are mistreated. And she has to make a choice. Does she want to not rock the boat and hope that she can become CEO of this company, take power so that she can affect change that way? Or does she have a human obligation to blow it all up and change things from within as soon as she knows that something's wrong? And we do see her wrestle with that. And we see, as she and Kay become closer, we also see Kay's sense of justice kind of butt up against that struggle for Amelia. Because for Kay, she believes, once she figures out, she doesn't figure out who Amelia is right away, but she does figure out that she works for the Duxton Group. And she thinks that if she can send Amelia in there, that she'll enact some change. And at the very least, she'll admit that she's working for a company that is terrible. And a lot of their tension is Amelia just won't say it. Amelia won't admit it to Kay. Like, she just won't do the action that Kay thinks should be done immediately. And they kind of have to grapple with like their images of themselves and each other and the world that they're in as they're trying to sort of navigate these feelings that they have for each other.
Winter does an amazing job in every book that I've read about advocating and speaking out for working people, specifically focusing in on women most of the time. Yeah. But this happens in other novels as well, bringing things to the forefront about accountability if something happens within your company and you have power, yeah. Which I'm always there for subtle introductions to people to things that they just may not ever experience unless they're directly in them. So I think that is a form of advocacy in writing, and I'm infinitely thankful for it.
Yeah.
When we got to the part where we found out, so spoilers abound, guys, stop listening now. When we got to the point where we learned that Amelia has been passed over for CEO for her cousin, whose daughter is like one of her favorite people in the world because she loves children, which is a whole side plot of kindness and joy, involving fish. And if owls have knees, and I'm not going to tell you if you haven't read, but the book will tell you. So anyway, when we find out that she's been passed over for this position, we also find out that the company plans on rolling out this point system that everybody is definitely, everybody's bound to fail because the system's not set up to allow anybody to thrive. And it turns into a thing about what does she do within, you know, the family structure and how her growing and what her eventual end goal looks like if she's now associated with this. We also know as readers by this point that Kay used to be a lawyer. There was kind of a double standard story exchange that put her career in jeopardy. And in turn, her current position was basically her being kind of blackmailed into not sharing findings she did about the group she works for, and instead using findings of other companies to make the competition easier to blow out of the water and take things from. So part of the competition between these two so much is just due to a setup of bad intentions leading to finding comfort where you can within the system that is broken, one being born into the family and the other basically like, well, you can make a living doing this instead. And what we see with Kay is that Kay is incredibly giving with her money and her time and her acknowledgement of people as a way to try to combat what she's doing and the advantages she takes there. And what we get from Amelia throughout the story is she's born into this family, but her way of combating it is to be the queer woman within this world and to make that powerful in a way that it's always getting shot down. It's very subtle for Amelia, but Amelia's power within this is phenomenally strong. And it's because of the writing. I think it would be really easy to make Amelia a stock character that was kind of flat, and she's anything but that.
We have this later in our notes, but I want to jump to the fact that we've already hit upon some pretty like real world subjects that come up in this book. There is capitalism. There is, you know, what does it mean to be a worker? What does it mean to exist in a capitalist system that doesn't have the best interests of its workers? We also do come up against homophobia. So Amelia is inarguably the smartest, best, well-trained member of her generation, of her family. And yet she is given, you know, her hotel in London, and her brother is given, you know, this is being groomed to be CEO because they've said, you know, like, we aren't going to give this post to a lesbian. We fundamentally aren't going to do it. And we learn that she thinks that by getting this new hotel and by fixing this one and giving a speech, you know, like they want her to replace her brother at the end of a conference in Vegas and give a speech. She does all of this thinking that she'll maybe finally be seen as a contender for CEO. And they say, like, no, as long as you're gay, like that's not going to happen. And we have Kay, who has some serious trauma in her past dealings with the Duxton family. She used to be, as you said, a lawyer, and has to leave that job, you know, really deals with her life being exploded because she tried to do the right thing and you know, that pissed the wrong person off. But whereas just a few weeks ago, we were talking about how we didn't like trauma for trauma's sake, here it works. Here I don't mind it. How did you feel?
I don't think any of it's a plot device here. I feel like this is a world that is familiar to me, and these are things that happen within. This is the opposite of authors who choose to make everything acceptable and enjoyable and welcoming. This is a very much a world where you can thrive and you can have power and you work really hard, but you're also still actively combating homophobia and ageism and sexism. And my cat jumping on Mike. So it didn't kick me. It worked here for me, but it worked here for me the way that this is a book where I go to see queer people navigating the world and flourishing in their own way within the world. So this is actually really uplifting for me. How was it for you?
No, it was, it worked for me as well, because I think these characters thrive anyway. We see them at their lowest and we see them make decisions to not let their trauma be their entire story. Like we get to see them actively try to change their situations. So we're introduced to a colleague, sort of like number two person of Amelia. Her name is Quinn. We'll get to the assistants like in a minute.
I have questions for you about the assistants.
But Quinn is brilliant. You know, she has multiple degrees in hospitality. She's personable, charismatic, and she's Amelia's number two. So she's like been on the ground, and she's also been passed up for opportunities, and the way that she's talked about by the white male members of the family is truly horrendous. And I appreciate that Winter doesn't back away from like depiction. She calls out the racism of the world that she's built. Like, you know, not everyone can exist within a perfect world, and not every person can exist in a world where racism doesn't, like, that it's just unfortunate that that's like our lived experiences. And I thought that it was smart for a book that does center like white privilege and white, like this Amelia, especially as this woman who has a lot of privilege and who works really hard, but is coming from a background that has a lot of power. And she's cognizant of how her, even despite like the traumas of her family, of like what she's dealing with, she recognizes where she still does have privilege and still is benefiting from like systems of whiteness. And
right. And we get a past narrative of her being madly in love with a woman of color, a Middle Eastern woman who was not the aggressor, but she initiated the relationship. And basically Miriam's father cut off the relationship and is like, you are ending this. I'm not having a queer daughter. And Amelia was accused of, you know, taking this woman and blah, 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 blah. And the situation was completely reversed. Like this ice queen was the one who was being broken down. And there's these moments of joy and these kind of flashbacky comments we get that are so incredibly touching. But one thing that was new to me within this text that I'm actually really like just thankful for. So thank you, Winter, for doing that. Is we hear that she's happy. She's married to a man. They have a kid, like this ex love of her life. And it shows relationships that were torn asunder, not ruining that person's life indefinitely. And in this case, not ruining either woman's life and genuinely being happy that somebody else is happy, even if it isn't with you. But I want to jump back into the two assistants real fast, because you live in a world with assistants and I know you have summer interns. Did Millie and Quinn work for you as second MCs, let alone like their fantastic hookup and all of that happens? Would either of these two be strong assistants to you, or how do you feel about them?
Oh, well, yeah, Lee Winter's books are, I should have said from the top, are really fun for me to read as, like, one of my roles is as an executive assistant, sort of chief of staff within my institution. And so, like, I love how she depicts an assistant to director relationship, because there is so much, like, trust and hard communication, and especially when, like, there are many, most days, like, you don't want to talk to your boss and your boss doesn't want to talk to you. And, like, there's something really interesting about being, for lack of a better word, an assistant, and sort of gaining more agency and being given more power because your boss gains confidence in you. And, like, that's a relationship that's really hard to describe, but, like, Winter does it so well, because on the one hand, the assistant has to understand the Ice Queen, you know, the person in charge intrinsically as a person, and both, like, what their motivations and their strategies are. And the boss has to trust the assistant to, like, have their best interests and to be their second eyes and ears. So I loved that depiction in this book. I love, you know, her depictions of like assistants and those relationships in her other books. I'm part of an, it sounds really stupid when I say this out loud, but I am part of a couple different circles of assistants, executive assistants, chief of staff, like number twos of different things. And one of the groups that I'm part of is international. And I try to imagine what it would be like to work with Millie, who is Kay's assistant, second in command. She is tightly wound. She's good at her job, but she's also just like, I have concern for her as a person. And it's like funny to try to imagine, like, what is it like to reach out to her and try to schedule a lunch? Like, what is it like to try, you know, who caves first and creates the Zoom call and has to run the Zoom call? Cause that's like a tightrope that I engage with on a daily basis. And
wait, like, which of you schedules the Zoom call on behalf of your,
who has to create, like, schedule and create the Zoom call? Because if you're scheduling something ahead of time, you can go ahead and schedule the call and, like, send the call out information. And certain people prefer that you, like, even get on and start the Zoom and then hand over hosting duties once everybody is there. And, like, do you record? Do you keep minutes of, you know, all that stuff? And I imagine that Millie is the type of assistant, and I interact with a handful of these, who makes me feel really bad about how I do my job. But I think we know that Millie doesn't have a great work-life balance. But we also learn that the reason that Millie, who is brilliant, and she's with Kay not because Kay is the best or because they work for, like, the most fancy hotel group, but because she truly believes in Kay's sense of justice and in the change that Kay wants to see in the hotel industry. And that's, like, when I read that, I had a little moment in my black little heart. It was beautiful.
Yeah, I feel like Millie has a mentor in her relationship with Kay instead of just executive to an assistant relationship. Also, I don't have any time for this black heart bullshit. Knock it off.
I have to maintain an image, Rebecca.
This is me putting... See, Amelia is who I would be if I had more of a backbone and didn't care about accidentally offending people, because I do that. But with... not Amelia, but Kay. Like Kay is who I feel like could be if like I would just go for it. So using Kay's energy, I'm gonna call out your Blackheart bullshit with your permission, and also put that in the episode with your permission. I now say yielding because I do think you're a boss ass bitch, but I also know that you are just incredibly empathetic and kind, and I don't. That's the Caitlin I always see. Aww. We are getting very short on time, so I'm gonna ask you about. It takes a long time in winter books to get here. And when we get to our, like, there's some hot makeouts. Don't get me wrong. That makeout scene in the room with the paid off housekeeper who's able to, like, keep her mouth shut. And so that whole scene and, like, the hands roaming under the rug, all of that's good. But let's, like, fast forward a little bit more. We get to the sex act. And there is concern from Amelia that she's not going to be able to perform. And she says, basically, I come across so incredibly confident and alpha and just in charge in real life that I get too in my head when I have intimate acts with people, and that causes additional trauma, like within that navigation, because the idea of me precedes me. There's this wonderful trade-off with Kay, kind of like sex flirting talk that leads to the physical, and then it flips. And then it flips back again because it's not just one and done, which is one of your pet peeves. Yep. How does this and or, as a greater whole, the long-awaited winter sex scene work for you?
Yeah. You know, I've said it before. I don't love a slow burn, but winter made it worth it. Winter made it worth it.
I'd like to just bottle that smile and sell it off.
I think that's sort of like the most eloquent I could be. Like, it's hot. I feel like the important thing about like the sex in these books is it's not just the culmination of the witty back and forth and the like flirtation, but it's also just good sex, and Winter does a good job of like unpacking the ideas that, you know, like that you can have about a person, like Amelia being honest about the fact that she doesn't always want to lead in bed. Sometimes she does, but sometimes she doesn't. And Kay sometimes needing to be in charge, but also needing to be overpowered when she's, you know, she doesn't need to be running the show. And it felt.
Well, and also Amelia bottom, like tops from the bottom too, which is something that we don't see a lot. And not to say like top bottom roles and one is always the other, but the second time that she is touched, she is definitely topping from the bottom. And you know, kudos. It's not a narrative I get to see very often in books. Like, get it.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah. And like, it's just not always perfect. Like, it's not always like you know, you've been flirting forever and then it's like perfect and the body is perfect. The person is, you come after three, like sometimes you do have to have those kind of awkward conversations. And sometimes, like with the bottoming from, or sorry, with topping from midway through a scene and like changing the scene up, that also happens. Like it's not always as cut and dry as like I do this to you and now you do this to me. Like it I like the fluidity of the sex scenes, and
there's so much additional. Sometimes it takes multiple stimuli for somebody to be aroused or to get off. Yeah. So besides just the physical touch, even talking about what will happen in the future is a form of stimuli for some people. So to incorporate both of those in this scene, as Kay is saying, like, I'm going to do this to you, but maybe I should do this to you. I think you'd get off on this more. So Amelia's also, it's very smart because Amelia is able to get out of where she's even concentrating on being touched. And like her mind is going to this next venture. So her body's reacting to one touch while her mind is not focusing on her insecurity and moving forward to a future scenario, which means to say that this is not a one and over, and not to say like, if this isn't perfect, it'll never happen again, you know? And I think seeing those types of representation in text one, can speak to a certain group of people who like find that enticing, and two, is a certain amount of education for people who are like, this is something I find alluring. Why do I find this alluring? Let me put to words so in a future act or with how I advocate for myself or how I'm able to advocate for somebody else, I have something that was not me in the real moment that I can use as like a neutral place in which to start from. And yeah. I'm very aware with characters over 30, let alone women in their 40s in this book. So here for this, who are sexual and like confident in their sex at, for the most part, like what Amelia says is not sex confident. She's like in her own head. The writing is just really helpful. It's really helpful and beyond this, like we're making love and it's going to last forever. And we both climax at the same time because we fit together like a key in a lock. Like,
well, and like what I loved about that is I think sometimes in these like WLW books, our depiction of a strong, confident woman often means like maybe they haven't had the best sex of their life, but it means that they don't have a lot of hangups about like, I don't see a lot of people in WLW fiction with like hangups about their sex life, which is so crazy because like basically every 2 weeks I have a different hangup about my sex life. And like, I'm pretty confident in like what I can do, what I can bring to the table. But that doesn't mean that I'm not like worried about X, Y, or Z. And I think.
Also you, like you leave the town. Well, I don't know if you actually ever hooked up with anybody in the town you grew up in. I didn't hook up with anybody in that town, but I definitely hooked up around Louisiana. The way that like sex negotiation worked for me in the early aughts in the Deep South versus the way it worked in Virginia versus how it worked when I talked to people in DC versus a couple, you know, I'm queer. There were girls in other states and we drove to meet each other, you know, part of the lesbian experience. Like that really started to get in my head because like what people expect, how they assume you're going to carry your body and what you're going to do with your own body and things like that. Like, navigating sleeping with somebody for the first time is a lot of fucking brain work. And I think something that speaks a lot to women is a lot of times we are worried about our performance to the person we're with instead of what we're getting from the experience. And if you don't know how to negotiate or say that from yourself to the other person, it can create a lot of tension for an act that should be released and safe. Also, this is a book where they talked about their last STI checks and it worked.
It did. Made a lot of sense.
We even got a kind of funny joke like, well, except for somebody a few weeks ago, but we didn't do anything that would require me to get tested. Again, because queer sex is complicated and nuanced, and I've never met two women who call it the same thing.
Exactly.
Ever. Even us.
So, yeah. Yeah. So I'm here for it.
Get it.
I'm here for it, Lee Winter.
Yeah. Get it. Yeah. The I love you and let's make this work happen a little quick, but also I was ready for it by the time it happened. I don't know. I just felt like these two would live in a similar world to begin with. And like choosing to date made sense. I don't know. I didn't need like 6 months for them to kind of like feel vulnerable in that way. It worked.
Yeah. And I mean, I also feel like we got so much of the buildup of them finally getting together and we got to see a lot of the navigation within themselves and like their places in the world that it, by the time it happened, by the time they got together and they were deciding to like live happily ever after or happily for now, I was pretty in, like I was invested. I was into it. I believed it. So
yeah, worked for me.
I think this is a good point to once again tell our listeners, like, there's so much we can't cover in this conversation about this book. Read it. And this is also one I think there are a few people in my life who are very kind about this project, but like don't like lesfic. They don't like romance. And I think this is now a book that I can have in my back pocket for those kinds of conversations where I'm like, okay, let's you know, then let's do this one. Because for me, a good half of the enjoyment is not even the interactions of Kay and Amelia, but just like the story, the plot, the back and forth of like these two competing hotel companies is so fun.
I completely agree. I think Winter is a great book for anybody who's skeptical about what a narrative can look like that features two women who also happen to be attracted to each other. Yeah, somebody give freaking Lee Winter a freaking movie deal with one of her novels already, please. Like, I need that. Nobody dies. There's some badassery. And there's enough moments that I'm like, ooh, that was uncomfortable, but I want more. Yeah. Like, just do it. I am going to be fully upfront. I have had a lot of other stuff going on, so I haven't read anything this week.
Well, I haven't been reading a ton, but there's one thing that I want to shout out that I've been reading. We were so lucky and like so thankful to receive Bet the Farm from Freona Riley, and I am slowly working my way through it, and it's just so fun, and I'm enjoying it.
Yeah, and kudos to Fiona Riley's family. They just welcomed a newest edition, so, you know, all the happiest congratulations and celebrations to you and yours and your family of five now, and the cats. That's awesome. I have not read this week. I do have Bet the Farm, full disclosure. I haven't gotten to it. It is my plan, hopefully after Tuesday of next week. And then two books are coming out this month that I am, like, well, three books are coming out this month that I'm over the moon for. Or four books, I guess. I'm over the moon for Over the Moon. I cannot wait for that. The new Alyssa Cole novel is coming out. Please bring that into my life. I'm really excited to read One Week in Aspen by Jamie Clevenger, who is another author that, like, if she writes it, I read it. And I'm just here for it. The Vacation Romance trilogy is deeply embedded in my heart in a special place of reservation. And then, without giving too many hints and things away, I just want to make sure I remind everybody that Prize Money by Celeste Castro is coming out this month. And I would highly nudge all of you to be inquisitive about it and check out Castro's work. Hint, hint, nudge, nudge.
Yeah. Well, my friend, if people want to chat with you about anything and everything that we talked about in this episode, because I know that you are a human and you have boundaries, where can people find you?
If you're looking for me, you can find me fastest on Twitter at Rebecca ATTT Pod. I'm also occasionally on my Instagram account at Rebecca Writes a Romance. We, Caitlin and I, are found on Twitter at ATTT Pod. Or on Instagram at A Tip of the Tongue. And Caitlin, if people would love to reach out to you, which I really think they should, talk more Ice Queens, give you more recs, where do they find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Same Sex the City, or you can find me on Instagram at Same Sex in the City. Love to chat.
All right, my friend. Well, cheers for the last swig we each have, and I look forward to talking to you off air and seeing you again in 2 weeks.